Good evening and welcome to the next episode of FearoCast. On this special episode of FearoCast, we'll be chatting with M1 Concours. And the gentleman that we will be chatting with is Tim McGrane. He is the CEO of M1 Concours. So again, this is why it's an extremely special episode. And we're going to chat with him about M1 and the big sponsorship of presenting the 40th anniversary of the Pontiac Fiero celebration in Pontiac, Michigan in July of 2023, which is coming up in a very short 6.5 months. Very close. I am your host, Mike Croyer, and you are listening to the newest episode of FieroCast, the only podcast dedicated to the Pontiac Fiero and the Fiero community. You can find past episodes at FieroFocus.com or on our Facebook page at Knife Club. We would like to thank our FieroCast supporters for this 2023 season: the Fiero Store, Rodney Dickman, Bontur Solutions, the Midwest Fiero Clubs, Golden Eye Graphic, and the NIFE Store. This episode of FieroCast is brought to you by the Midwest Fiero Clubs and the Fiero Store. Have you asked yourself, what is the Midwest Fiero Clubs? Well, the Midwest Fiero Clubs, which is also a region of the AACA, is a dedicated group of enthusiasts whose passion is to promote and preserve the Pontiac Fiero and the Fiero community. The Midwest Fiero Clubs consists of members from existing Fiero Clubs across the U.S. The Midwest Fiero Clubs' intent is to support member clubs and promote the Fiero-related events that they offer. The intent is to enable enthusiasts to discover events in their areas other than their own, and to warrant participation. This has created a tighter-knit Fiero community of the owners, and created some great regional shows that may not have otherwise happened. So, how do I find out about them? You can visit the website at midwestfieroclubs.aaca.com or just Facebook them at Midwest Fiero Clubs AACA and like them. We know how hard it is to find Fiero parts. We also know that as years go by, finding parts isn't going to get any easier. The big box stores will never make new Fiero parts because our community is just too small. This is why we need to support the companies that support us. For nearly 30 years, the Fiero Store has sponsored our club events, provided free technical support, and produced well over 150 exclusive parts that no big box store would even consider. So, next time you need Fiero parts, head over to thefierostore.com and browse through thousands of products that are specifically designed for your Fiero. That's fierostore.com, the world's largest source of Fiero parts. As we head into this new year, 2023, and heading into the upcoming 40th anniversary celebration of the Pontiac Fiero to be held in Pontiac, Michigan from July 12th through July 16th, of this year, we would like to thank our sponsors. A big thank you goes out to our presenting sponsor and joining us today, M1 Concours. Our other sponsors include Pickard P2P Performance, the Fiero Store, Golden Eye Graphic, Fast Signs of O'Hare, Minnesota Fieros Forever, Back to the 80s, and Magic Back Incorporated. We would now like to introduce to you the CEO of M1 Concours, Tim McGrane.
Mike, it's a pleasure.
Very exciting to have both you guys chatting today with me. You know, M1 being the presenting sponsor of the 40th anniversary celebration of the Pontiac Fiero in Pontiac, Michigan. So before we get too deep into the FieroCast, Tim, tell us a little bit about your experience with M1 and how you joined M1.
Okay. So I took over the position I have CEO of M1 February of last year. I had been in the sort of different aspects of the collector car, classic car, car racing world with different responsibilities. I'd been in the classic car auction world. I had run a museum a couple of times. I ran a racetrack in California. And I had finished that. The contract for that ended at the end of 2019. And a friend of mine that's based in the Southeast said, you know, asked me if I'd heard of M1 Concourse. And when you're in the track business, you hear of, you know what other tracks are doing because there's sort of these different associations, and was certainly aware of some of the new club tracks, as sometimes they refer to, because I had some friends on the West Coast that had been involved with Thermal and the Apex Club in Phoenix. So I had heard about it. I didn't know anything more than that. Had a conversation with them enough that it was worth, jumping on a plane and from Phoenix to Detroit, which was a direct flight. I knew it was an intimate space. 87 acres is large. But my point of reference coming from Laguna Seca, which sat on 550 acres. Wow. But once it got here, it was done, what was done at the time with the private garages, the event center was just basically only just starting. And the signature events that we were getting ready to, that were going to be launched once COVID were behind us. It was an intriguing opportunity to take what's a relatively new project and launch it. So I took the position February of last year. It's been an exciting time. We got a lot going on. We still got a lot of new stuff ahead of us. And obviously, for 2023, the Fiero 40th anniversary is certainly going to be a great part of what we've got lined up for next year.
Very cool. Very cool. Not a lot of people know, but what was the original idea, or what was the idea behind M1 and the philosophy of that?
Well, there are, so we've been open 6 years. August of this year would be our sixth anniversary. So a couple of years prior to that, I think it was the owners were looking for somewhere to build a sort of a private garage complex with a track. There were some of them around. I think the most notable ones that the people may be aware of in upstate New York, there's Monticello. And outside of Miami, there's the Concord Club. And as I previously mentioned, there's Thermal in the Palm Springs area, Apex outside of Phoenix, and some others. And then certainly, plenty that, and Autobahn out in Juliet outside of Chicago. So I think that the concepts are, and again, we're in Motor City, so there's a number of people, with cars and the desire to do something with them. The concept to come up with somewhere to do this. Now, the biggest challenge that tracks face is, if you're looking for a new track, is how far away can we be away from the people that are going to complain about the noise? And that is just the reality of the motor racing circuits. If you're a legacy track, you still get people move into the area and then start complaining. Laguna Seca, we were 60 years old and people would move in and start complaining about the noise. So somebody looking for a new property ideally is looking out, where they hopefully don't have the problems with that. Well, this location in Pontiac was the former site of the GMC Truck and Assembly Plant West, as it was formerly known. And it had, GM had gone bankrupt when they did in 2008 or 2009, that period. And the property had basically torn down the building. So it was a very unattractive piece of property for many reasons. It also had been a site of motor vehicle manufacturing since the very early 1900s. The Rapid Motor Vehicle Company, I think, first started vehicle production here in about 1905, and that ultimately became what we now know as GMC. So, environmentally, the property had some potential issues. There was an organization that was established to try and turn these former automotive manufacturing plants, most of which were former GM plants, into a piece of property that somebody could look at and develop. And make sure that they had the necessary support to address what ultimately is environmental concerns. It's called the Racer Trust. So this piece of property was identified by Racer Trust. And, you know, there was an incentive program that if somebody developed the property, that there would be a tax incentive based on, you know, a percentage of the money was spent. So that made this piece of property sort of somewhat attractive from a point of view of a business plan. And because it had formerly been a truck and assembly plant, and the city of Pontiac and the county of Oakland were very motivated to get some, you know, get somebody in here to turn this piece of property around. It became of interest to be the concept of what M1 Concourse is now known.
Was the city of Pontiac very, receptive to having an actual course within its limits, because it is based in a very auto industry productive area?
They were. Now, I wasn't around at the time, so I'm only going on you know, what information I've acquired since I've been here. But I know, dealing with a number of people that have been in the city for decades, you know, it was, I think it was embraced, but albeit cautiously. Now, the track that we have, which is a 1.5 mile, and it's classified as a high-performance driving experience track. It's not a racetrack. And I think that was probably a key part of it, of the acceptability. It wasn't going to become a small version of Michigan International Speedway. I think that helped the sort of the approval process and giving the necessary permits to do what ultimately we've done here, which is build private garage condos, which are, they're referred to as condos, but they're not residential. You can't live on this property. We have 255 of them. The last 80 got completed and sold the beginning of this year. So that part of the project is all finished. I do suspect that when they went out, you know, with the concept of what was being done, I could only imagine some of the responses that it had. It would be a case of, you know, you're building what, where? certainly, you know, Pontiac has a, you know, it's turning around, but at that time, it would not be a target place to think about this. But I think it's, you know, it's worked. I know a number of the owners in the first phase still own places here, and they're very happy. And I've also talked to some people that thought about buying in phase one or phase two. We actually have four phases that were, and they kicked themselves that they didn't, because now they bought in the last phase, or they still wish they had. They've done very well value-wise. And in addition to that, it's also created a great automotive and car culture community here. And one of the key parts about that is obviously one of the things we do is the events and the activities that we do here, but also a high percentage of our garage owners probably live between 20 and 30 minutes away at most. So it's very easy for them to just sort of stop by. Yeah. I most recently moved here from Scottsdale, Arizona. So I would go out to Apex, and I lived in the central part of Scottsdale, and it was a good hour and 50 minutes one way. And a number of the owners of garages out there lived north of Scottsdale, which was another 30 minutes. So that was a day's commitment. You're not just stopping by. Whereas, you know, we have that luxury. The people do just stop by their garages here. So the social part of what the garage community has become very beneficial.
The owners that own the garages, is that part of a membership, or is that if you own a garage, do you get access to the course?
So first of all, they do own the garages. They get deeds to the land. And the garage community is now part of its own independent association. You know, we as the developers of the garage part of the phase now transferred management of the garage section of it over to the independent owners association. So as a garage owner, you have the right option to be able to join our motorsports club. And as a motorsports club member, you then get access to the track through certain, you know, scheduled days. You know, we'll do You know, morning laps in the summertime. We have a lot of open lap days, both weekdays and weekends. And then in the summer months, we also do evening laps. So that's how the garage owners get tracks, access to the track. You can't join the motorsports club unless you're a garage owner. And not every garage owner is a track member. We have some owners that own older cars. There's one particular owner that's got a collection of late 20s classic cars. Obviously, not something he's going to run on a track. So he enjoys being here, but he won't be. We won't see his cars on the track other than when we have Collector Car Appreciation Day.
Another something that people may not understand or know: what is the difference between a concourse course and a racetrack?
So, as I refer to us, we're a high-performance driving track. The difference that between a track that's going to be used for competition is usually the width of the track is the first characteristic. We are 30 feet wide all the way around, and usually a track that's going to be used for competitive purposes, probably looking at least 40 feet, if not wider, in other places. The runoff area in certain areas would probably be longer than what we've got. So, you know, in a wheel-to-wheel environment, you know, you have the potential for, two or more competitors, going into a turn, at speed. Now, we've got a lot of runoff areas, in our track. It was designed to drive fast on, so it's very safe in that respect. But again, I think for the most part, it's probably, it couldn't be converted, but, a racetrack is, and also you're going to have more overtaking zones when you're designing a track for competitive driving as opposed to, sort of solo driving.
I'm looking at an aerial view on Google Maps, and there's quite a good amount of turns. I mean, you've got a couple good one long straightaway.
Yeah.
What are some of the fastest speeds that have been run on the track?
So we have 11 turns. And actually, one unique thing about the track, it was designed to run in both directions.
Oh wow!
We traditionally run in a clockwise direction, but to give the club members a different experience, it can be run counterclockwise. We don't have in a competitive track. You're going to have places where if a car goes off, they can pull it behind the barricade, and those are usually designed such that if in the racetrack direction. There's always a position of safety for support vehicles, flag marshals, and everything like that, and for a car to either come on the track if needed, if it's an emergency vehicle, or for a car that maybe is having mechanical problems, can be pushed out of the way. So we just have pit lane, pit out, pit in and pit out, and then one other area at the far end of the track. With regards to speeds, that long straightaway that you sort of see, as I tell some people, it's not necessarily how fast you can go, it's how good your brakes are at the end. But we've at the end of that straight, you're running in the clockwise direction, you will probably get to sort of in the 150, 160 range.
Wow, that's pretty good.
If you're driving a car that's got downforce characteristics, and that would be either a track car like a Dallara built this new EXP, which is specifically for track use, and it's got downforce characteristics, that gives you a lot more confidence to be able to go in, because at the end of that straight, as you'll see, there's quite a sweeping turn.
Yeah,
so you can carry some speed. You can carry some speed into it, but yeah. So that's probably about where you are, sort of speed wise. But we have some members that have some smaller track cars where it's a radical. There's one called a Wolf. They can get some quick times around here. So they're more nimble in the turning sections.
That's pretty cool. I'm looking forward to seeing the track and everything in person too.
Last year, just before the Detroit Grand Prix, which obviously is an Indy car as the feature event, but it also has the IMSA series as support, and it had the Lamborghini Trofeo Cup, and the race before, the team out of Europe had some mechanical issues, and they came and they rented the track for the day just to sort of test the car. And unfortunately, we didn't have a clock on the Lamborghini, but I suspect that was probably the quickest time. And visually, you could just tell he was moving pretty swiftly around the track.
Wow. That's cool. So looking at you know, the different cars and everything that have come to the track, what, in your time, what would you say is probably the most valuable car that's run the course and most unique car that's run the course?
Well, sometimes value and historical can go together. So I'm going to put it under the historical. Last year at our American Speed Festival, we were extremely fortunate to have four of the Chaparral cars out of the museum in Midland, Texas. Those are the cars that Jim Hall built to do the sort of what started off to be the US RRC series and eventually went into sort of the Can-Am and even the European sports car series. So the two high wing Chaparrals that were on track here, that probably was one of those moments.
Wow.
That was, I don't tell you that was one of those goosebump moments. We'd worked hard to do it. When I was a kid, I watched those cars race only a few times because I was lived in Europe and they race at Brands Hatch, but they very rarely, in fact, it hasn't been since like 2004 or 2005 that more than one of the cars has been on the track at any one time, because they are so historically significant and in turn valuable that they will only let one out. But because they were driving around here in formation, albeit the Jim's son, Jim Jr., and Jim Hall's grandson, Kai, they picked up the pace a bit. So it was good to see them at speed around here. From a point of uniqueness, I'm going to say probably the Lotus Turbine Indy car, the STP colors. That was a unique car to see around here. The Henry Ford Museum brought out their early 1900 sweepstakes car, which I actually got to ride in, which was a bit of an e-ticket ride. they don't give you anything to hold on to, and it sits up high. And as the guy that was driving it said, we've got brakes in name only. And he wasn't wrong. But I think the STP Indy Turbine car, partly because I think it's a very unique sound that it makes when it goes around.
Is that the one that kind of looks like it looks like a bullet?
It's more of a wedge shape.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's very distinctive. You know, I think wedge shape is probably the only way to describe it. But not only does it make that unique turbine sound, you know, which gives some people, you know, they see the car, but they see the sound and they start looking up because it sounds like something that should be in a helicopter. But then it's got that sort of heat haze that follows it around. But this last American Speed Festival, we were fortunate to have some very historic Shelby Cobras out here with Peter Brock, the gentleman that designed the Daytona Coupes. So each time we do one of our signature events, we've been fortunate through either the feature class, which was Shelby this year. We're moving into doing what we're doing next year. The Vintage Indy group come out with a whole bunch of cars. It's been really great to start building these signature events with these wonderful cars that come out.
Are the talking about events, and we'll discuss the 40th anniversary here momentarily, but looking at events, what other kind of signature events do you guys host, and is it open, are the events themselves open to the public, or is it just again for the members?
Yeah.
Membership.
So at the moment we do two signature events, and yes, they are open to the public. We do one in August that we call Woodward Dream Show. and it is held the Friday of what's generally known as Dream Cruise Weekend. So traditionally that third weekend in August. Because we're located right on Woodward Avenue, it's very much an event about the sort of the car culture and Woodward Avenue car culture. So American hot rods, American muscle cars, American cruising cars, you know, not specifically American, but certainly predominantly. This year, we celebrated 90 years of the 32 Ford, the iconic hot rod known as the Deuce. As we go into next year, we're going to celebrate 70 years of the Corvette. The other events that we do during our season, which goes from March through October, on the first Saturday of each month, we host a cars and coffee event that's open to the public. We put a theme, you know, to each month. So we started it this year and it worked out very well. So certain months will have a theme, like opened up first for March of 2023. It'll be, you know, Ford, Lincoln and Mercury. We you know, all cars are welcome, but those are the feature cars, and we start displaying those in our arena, which is the rectangular space in the middle of the track. This year, I think we celebrated Ford in April or May. It was May. And the morning started off a bit crisp, and we had a line of cars that we hadn't seen in the two previous months. And we heard that Ford Motor Company or somebody within Ford Motor Company had sent an email around encouraging all Ford employees to take their Ford Lincoln or whatever they have to M1 to sort of fly the flag. And they came out in droves. We had cars everywhere. But we do a European month. We do a GM brands, one focused on Mopar. We'll do one. The last one each year is focused on the Japanese domestic marks and Asian brands. But those events are open to the public. Another event we do is usually the weekend before July 4th. We do a Cars Under the Stars fireworks spectacular.
Oh, wow.
In the non-automotive space this year, we introduced what we call M1 Cycling Classic. We work closely with the Michigan Bike Racing Association. And I had, when I was at Laguna Seca, that track was the host venue for a cycling event that grew over the years called Sea Otter Classic. So I'm not a cyclist. But I know that the benefits of tracks and how they can, you know, be embraced to create a cycling event. So we've launched this M1 Cycling Classic. And then we're going to start working on maybe introducing another one or two more signature events. So I mentioned our first signature event in August is Woodward Dream Show. And then the second one we do is the first weekend in October, and that we call American Speed Festival. For 2023, we've actually got three themes. For that, we actually, as part of the, you know, it's 2023 is 100 years of the Le Mans 24-hour race. So we're going to focus on Americans at Le Mans, you know, the cars, the teams, the drivers. We're also doing 70 years of Corvette. And we're also going to do, it's the 50th anniversary of the start of the IROC series. So we're going to do a class of IROC cars. We're looking forward to that. If nothing else, it'll be colorful.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and just listening to the events and everything like that, it's like it just, you know, makes July that much more, you know, great to come visit. But it's like it makes me want to go and get some vacation time to go up there and see all the other events. But yeah, I know you guys have a great schedule, and I mean it's something that definitely looking forward to. For 2023, because just some of the things you mentioned, it's, you know, on my bucket list of just seeing some of those events. So, yeah. But yeah. But so in July, you guys will be hosting the track day for the 40th anniversary of the Pontiac Fiero. When the Midwest Fiero Clubs first approached you about becoming a sponsor, what was your thought about the Pontiac enthusiasts bringing the Pontiac Fiero to M1 Concours?
Well, when it was funny, but when the very first time that I visited M1, I think was back in October 2 years ago, and I was met with the owners. I think it was a Saturday morning, and there was a group touring the facility, but I think the weather was probably not that accommodating. And I remember at the time that somebody had told me, well, that's a group with the Pontiac Fiero Club. They're looking to do an event here in a couple of years. So when I got here, I'd already heard, you know, I already was aware that the conversation was going. And then it got approached. And I can't remember whether it was Jan approached me directly or through Rosanna Hall at the GM facility here in Pontiac. But they asked about, you know, if we would become involved. And one of the things is, you know, we get asked by, you know, a lot of opportunities to sort of use the track. And, you know, we are, you know, very much a sort of a business. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we had looked at it from that point of view. It's okay, what would, you know, what's the request for the use of track? What were they looking to do for the multiple days? I think our event center building is probably not large than that they were looking for for the one day that we're doing the static. But ultimately, I think it's now over at the Marriott Hotel nearby that we work closely with. But I got to know Rosanna Hall with community relations over GM soon after I got here. And, you know, in talking with her, you know, she sort of stressed, and she's also very involved with the city of Pontiac and the Pontiac community, which I have become as much as I can in the short time I've been here. You know, and because, you know, Pontiac is the home of the Fiero, you know, we felt it was important to do what we could do to make sure that we embrace the event, you know, with the owners club. So we were excited about the opportunity. Certainly want to, you know, it's a milestone anniversary. Mm-hmm. So I think mm-hmm. it's important for us to be a partner in that, you know, to help sort of celebrate that brand, but also sort of to help celebrate and showcase, you know, the automotive history, you know, of the city of Pontiac.
Yeah, I 100% agree on that. What can the Midwest Fiero Clubs plus the owners expect during the event of M1?
Well, for those that haven't been here before, I think they'll be impressed with the facility. You know, it's you know, at that time of the year, you know, we'll be, you know, all our sort of grass areas around and inside the track is going to be lush green. You know, our event center, the 30,000 square foot event center that got finished the end of September last year. That's right on pit lane. You know, so that's going to be a great act. And I think that, and also it depends on exactly what the club are doing with their activities, you know, the static part of their activities, either in the event center or in the plaza, and then the on-track activities. I know we have a number of garage owners that usually like to embrace these types of gatherings, and there's always the potential for garage owners to open up their places, and some of those can be very impressive. But I think that the, you know, the owners will come away. You know, it's our intent to make sure we put on a spectacular event for them, and they'll get to, you know, enjoy, you know, driving their cars, you know, around, and hopefully there'll be some great photo opportunities for them to take away as memories.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So some of the owners that will be running the track, would it be more of a track at speed, or would it be more of a pace lap? And what are some of the rules on running on the track? You know, if somebody's got somewhat of a leaky oil cap, or brakes aren't 100%, or what are some of the things that you guys look at to make sure that the owners stay safe when they're on the track?
Yeah. Well, first of all, and you know, one thing we'll go through is work closely with the event organizers, and specifically the people that oversee the track activities, to make sure that, you know, what guidelines they're requiring the owners. So, you know, if they are hoping to do some laps at maybe a little faster speed, then that would be behind sort of a pace car. But they could just be looking at doing sort of parade laps, you know, depending on how many cars are looking to participate, or if they want to get as many cars out there at one time. You know, in all cases, you know, we do, you know, we have a pretty extensive track operations team. We always make sure we give people a checklist that they should just check, even if they're going out, so just, you know, on a parade lap drive, just sort of do a once around the car, the things to watch out for. You know, then when they go out, if they're out on track and something happens, you know, the instructions are is to pull off track, you know, immediately, you know, sort of signal that you're doing that, depending upon the type of car they're in. You know, we've got a full complement of track marshals that communicate, so they'll be able to identify it. And in some cases, sometimes things happen to cars that people aren't aware of. You know, they're looking out the windshield, and they don't realize they're smoking out the back. So there'll be certain flag signals that they'll be looked to what, you know, to watch out for.
So for those that will be participating in the track, whether it's faster pace or just a parade, will there be a kind of a driver's meeting briefly before so they can understand what those signals are?
Certainly. We do that. We have a track diagram. We have a short track video just to sort of show people as they're going around. You know, it's not a difficult course. It's not a technical course. It's for the most part, you know, very flat. We've got a slight elevation change. You know, we've got could be slightly described as a blind corner, but it's nothing like, you know, entering the corkscrew at Laguna Seca where, you know, for the first time people think they're driving off a cliff. So from that point of view, but still we go through a short video just to give them the idea, show them where the flag stands are. You know, they're obviously very visible, but still some people, you know, if they're getting out there, you know, they have a tendency to sort of just, you know, watch the car in front. We always tell people that's a good idea, but make sure you know where you're going, because if he goes off, you don't want to follow him into the grass. Right.
So. So while we're at the M1 and for the event, because we might have some people ask even prior to the event, will you have somebody on site that can talk to them about memberships or how they can participate in some of the future events if they want to partake in those?
Certainly, yeah. So we actually have just launched, at the end of this year, a new car club called the M1 Concourse Car Club. And the reason we did that is because these events that are open to the public or the other activities, we've got a lot of interest and people wanted to sort of, you know, participate in what we do here. And as I mentioned previously, our motorsports club is just for garage owners. So our M1 Concourse Car Club is intended to create this sort of affinity group. You know, there'll be, you know, member benefits. There'll be, you know, discounted or preferred pricing on ticketing to our signature events. They'll get a copy of our new publication that will come out 2 times a year. We'll also, there'll be preferred parking during our Cars and Coffee, you know, for member parking. We are going to do a spring and a fall track day for members. That's one of the biggest requests that we get. People want to sort of take their car on track. And, you know, as long as the car is sort of track worthy, for driving fast, again, not competition driving, then we'll create these track days for the membership. So absolutely, you know, we welcome the opportunity to be able to go over that, share that with the members.
Is there, again, some people could possibly ask this too, are there volunteer opportunities as well to help assist in some maybe daily or monthly routines around the
facility? There are. We call it our ambassador program. We started that earlier, actually sort of the for our first signature events. And it's growing quite quickly. So they are our signature events, you know, rely as a lot of motorsports or major events do. The volunteers or your ambassadors, as we call them, are a key part of how those events happen. You know, we have opportunities when we do our monthly Cars and Coffee. And then we have some ambassadors that help when we have our, you know, regular member track days.
Nice. What would you say would be some of the long-term goals of sponsoring an event like the 40th anniversary celebration of the Pontiac Fiero?
Well, I think, you know, there's probably, you know, a number of reasons. One, I think, you know, the main part is, you know, making sure that, you know, M1 Concourse is very much involved with a signature event, you know, coming to the city of Pontiac, an automotive event coming to the city of Pontiac. You know, I think we look at, you know, the Metro Detroit area has lots of automotive venues around here. You know, there's some of the old, you know, historic factory sites. There's the great Henry Ford Museum, some collections, but on an ongoing basis, you know, we like to think that, you know, we're a key part of creating or adding to that car culture that's here, you know, year round. So for an event such as the Pontiac Fiero 40th anniversary coming back here, I think it was very important for us to be involved. I think that, you know, if we'd missed the opportunity, it would have been a shame to sort of hear about it after the fact. So, and we very much want to embrace the car culture in all aspects. It's not just, you know, sort of 50s and 60s American and hot rods, even though we're on Woodward Avenue and we love that. It's the foreign marks. Another thing that's very important to us is to embrace what we can do to engage, you know, younger people, either into the sort of the car world or embrace them in the car culture world. That's one of the things we find important with our cars and coffee. It gives people of all different generations and all different car passions, you know, to bring their car and enjoy it. I remember a few months ago or the middle of the year, you know, somebody had suggested, well, maybe we should separate out and put the Fords in one area and the Chevrolets in one area each month. And my initial response, well, you know, that's a car show. You know, we want this to be sort of informal. As much as we have themed events, the idea is that you get, you know, people that may like, you know, either a certain type of car, engage with other people, you know, so you could have somebody of an older age, you know, in a, you know, 60s Lincoln or 60s Cadillac or a hot rod. And then you've got a younger person in a, you know, souped up, you know, Ford Focus or one of the Japanese marks. And the idea is to keep, you know, to get them to embrace each other's passion about cars. I look back at the cars that I liked when I was younger, and they're significantly different for the most part than the cars I like now, you know, most of which because I hadn't been exposed to some of the cars that I have in the career that I've had in the sort of classic car and race car world.
Yeah, touching back on the younger generation, the Fiero community as a whole and Midwest Fiero clubs and the clubs that are under the Midwest Fiero clubs, that's one thing that we've kind of been focusing on for the past couple years is spotlighting that younger generation and bringing them into that higher end of what the Fiero is, and the older generation passing down the information. And we've just noticed over the past couple of years that we've had a high jump in that younger generation of the car collecting world. And we've noticed that they want to be more involved. They want to take their cars out and they want to spotlight them. And, you know, it's like you put them in a mix of middle and older generation, and they gather all that information and they use that. And that's just what we've known over the past couple of years and seen is that younger generation is coming alive a lot more. And I think putting them in a mix and seeing what, you know, the possibilities is really interesting. But
as I mentioned, the last Cars and Coffee of the season was the Japanese domestic marks. And first of all, it was, you know, it was, the temperature was quite low early in the morning. The weather was, you know, it was bright sun. But we had a tremendous turnout. And I remarked to a friend of mine that was visiting from California. We looked around and there were probably more right-hand drive cars at that event than any British car show that I've been to in a long time. You know, because they're embracing unusual cars or cars that they're passionate about, but also they want, you know, something that's slightly different or, you know, so and also obtainable. I mean, that's one of the things. Yes, you know, it's, you know, we all like the, you know, the great supercars or the classic 50s and 60s sports cars whether it's unfortunate or just a reality that they become, you know, very valuable. But it's the passion for all different types of cars. I see some cars that some of these people sort of drive, you know, out here, and it's remarkable that, you know, they've got them out and they're keeping them extremely roadworthy or even performance focused.
Nice. Yeah. So as we wind down here, a couple last questions here. What are you looking forward to as we embark our journey into the event of M1 in July?
I think one of the things I would say we'd like to do is that hopefully with M1 being a part of this event, it will make the event stand out and maybe attract people to participate in the gathering, whether they're coming from the Midwest area or even further afield, because they see it as a unique opportunity because M1's involved. Secondly, I think it's, you know, if we can help, you know, maybe introduce people to the Fiero as a model that maybe, you know, were aware of it, but hadn't really focused on it. You know, they mm-hmm. knew it in its day. You know, it's in their mind, it's come and gone. And then they come here and you know, they'll see a great lineup of cars, you know, with all different types of people owning them and enjoying them.
As far as I've seen a picture we did in Fiero Focus. One of our editors, Christopher Sass, did a write-up feature article on M1 as well, which will come out in January. What are some of the cars in your collection?
Oh, I've been very fortunate to over the years to take care of you know, a lot of very large and very impressive collections. So I've sort of, you know, lived that passion through, you know, previous affiliations. So I like a broad range of cars. I've got so at the moment, you know, moving out here to sort of Michigan from the West Coast. Actually, I was looking just this past week. A friend of mine is going to participate in an event in England, and he's looking for a late 30s sort of Rolls Royce or Bentley, but not necessarily one of the, you know, Concours winning you know, custom coachwork one, but just a good sort of driver, but a nice car, you know. And he lives here all the time. He lives between here and the West Coast. And I actually started looking around and I thought, well, that would be a lot of fun. Now, one has to be a little bit more practical about what cars one owns in this part of the world. In California and Arizona, you know, other than the hot temperatures in Arizona, you've pretty much got year-round use of the cars,
where exactly.
This part of the world isn't. But then there's just sort of a diversity of passions here. You know, you get to August and it's all about hot rods and the 32 Fords. I've been looking around at those, but we recently moved here and we're still having work done on the house that we bought not too long ago. And I know my wife, when she sees me looking at this, she's like, well, hold on a moment, we've got this project to finish first.
So, I mean, the event, M1, you know, I think this is a awesome partnership that both the Midwest Fiero Clubs and M1 have joined together on. And I think this is going to be probably one of the most memorable events that our membership and our fear owners are going to have. And, you know, it's something that a lot of people can now cross off their bucket list, because, you know, we've heard about it for the past many years, and now we get to, it's a reality that we get to do this. And thankful and thank you to you guys for making it happen.
No. I think one of the things that also, and I found, you know, I found this in different other positions I've had, you know, where when I ran the Black Hawk Museum in Northern California, which I did for two separate times, you know, you'd have an event and people would come in and all of a sudden somebody would introduce themselves and you found out that, you know, they were, you know, part of the family of one of the famous designers from the 30s, or maybe they were one of the designers from the pre-war cars, or, you know, we're in town here and you'll meet somebody you know, they worked at one of the factories and they were involved with the building of these cars. I think that will be interesting to see if you can get, you know, people that in their day were involved with, and this is the particular case of this event, the sort of Fiero that was out here. When we had the Chaparrals at last year's American Speed Festival because of Jim Hall's relationship, you know, with General Motors, you know, albeit through the back door from the performance division, you know, there was a couple of people that came by and said, well, I was involved with that project. And, you know, we couldn't talk about it at the time. So it's interesting that to meet those people from I would say from history that were part of creating the cars that now these people are. So hopefully that's another thing that we can do here for those people in this area that were involved with the Fiero project.
Yeah, and I agree 100%. And it's one of the nice things about these anniversary shows is we do get a nice group of workers, employees, executives that attend these events. And they're always in awe of what they see on what the Fiero was and what it has become. And even, you know, having them come out to the track and M1 to see some of these cars, you know, be able to perform on track level and stuff like that, I think to them it will just be, you know, awe-inspiring. And we've jaw-dropped a lot of the workers and that they've seen it too. So it's become these anniversary shows have become almost like a family affair, family reunion for a lot of the workers and employees and everybody. So
hopefully the club can attract some of those guys that still run some of the Fiero cars that ran in the GTP series.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if they do, I know I saw one, not this year, but last year I was down at the Classic 24 at the Daytona. But, you know, we can get a couple of people, any of those that are still, you know, ran in the historic series and the event organizers, you know, want to try and carve out, maybe we can carve out some separate track time for some speed laps for those guys.
All right. We will keep that in mind. I know one of our speakers is high, you know, really into racing, John Callies. So he might, I think, be joining us at M1 on that day too. So, but any last or closing comments or anything that from?
No, first of all, really appreciate the opportunity. You know, with to work with Jen and the Midwest Clubs group in putting this together, through Rosanna's help over at GM. You know, we just want to make sure that, you know, people are coming, you know, with the expectation of they're excited about the event that they come to, but they leave having a great time for the part that we're involved with.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thank you, Tim, for taking time out of your very busy day and joining us. And again, thank you. We can't say thank you enough for the partnership and the sponsorship that you guys are doing for us. And you, I mean, that's big. You know, presenting the 40th is a big deal for us. And that, you know, again, thank you very much for supporting us in this event. So.
Now, Mike, we're looking forward to it, and thank you for the opportunity to talk with you this morning, and you know, look forward to you know, meeting the members at the event, and for those ones that maybe are in this area closer, maybe we'll see them before the event comes around as well.
Absolutely. All right. Well, I will let you get back to your day, and again, thank you very much.
All right. Very good, Mike. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
Bye.
All right. That was a very awesome Fierocast. Thank you to Tim for joining me tonight. It was a pleasure talking to you and all things M1. We are excited to be able to step inside this magnificent facility and see it in person and what M1 is all about come July 14th. You can find more information about M1 Concours at m1concours.com. as well as on their Facebook page and on YouTube as well. This podcast was produced by GoldenEye Graphic and is a production of the Northern Illinois Fiero Enthusiasts. Thank you for joining me tonight. I am your host, Mike Croyer, and thank you for listening to the newest episode of FieroCast. This is episode 36, and it is the only podcast dedicated to the Pontiac Fiero and the Fiero community. If you like more information or have ideas on future FieroCasts, you can email me at mkroyer@fierofocus.com. Remember to keep Fieroing, and good night, Fiero owners, wherever you are.